Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity, the leading podcast for residential service contractors, sponsored by Service Roundtable and hosted by David Heimer.
Hi, this is David Heimer. Welcome to Profiles in Prosperity. Today I'm talking with Rory Krueger, the owner, founder, and leader of Krueger Heating, Air Conditioning, and Geothermal in Springfield, Missouri. Rory is a veteran of our industry. He's got a ton of experience and he runs a great company. He is a Service Nation Advisory Board mentor for AB6 and for the Retail Sales Masterminds Group. You can't be a Service Nation Advisory Board mentor without being a smart person, having a lot of experience, and having a lot of wisdom. Rory has all of the above and more. And one of the things I find particularly interesting about Rory and his company is that they do a lot of geothermal work. So Rory Krueger, welcome to Profiles in Prosperity.
David, thank you very much for having me. Appreciate being here.
So tell me how you ended up getting into HVAC.
It goes back to the late 70s, early 80s. My parents decided to purchase a resort on Table Rock Lake. We're in the Ozarks, Branson, Missouri area. And they wanted to buy a resort. My dad's goal was he wanted to sail for at least 30 minutes a day. So if he owned a resort on a lake, he could sail. I think we sailed 5 times in the 10 years of owning the property. So we see how that worked out. But that was back in my high school days. And when you buy a property that has 75 air conditioners and heating systems on them, you learn how to work on them. That was how that kind of, I truly got started in the industry, much like other people. I worked for a couple other people I knew getting into my 20s and then finally decided it was time to branch out on our own.
When did you start the business and what was it that caused you to start your own business?
I had partnered with somebody through the late 90s and early 2000s. And then would have been in 2002. He wanted to stay in the large commercial sector. We visited a couple times. I had had residential customers who had followed me, you know, from, like I said, the mid 80s, all that time. You know, I had been at only 2 companies that whole time, but they would call and go, hey, yeah, I still want you to take care of my stuff or work on my things or whatever it is. So they would follow me to the next, you know, to that next company. And so anyways, when we got ready to kind of go our separate ways, me in the residential side, him in the commercial industrial side, and he still is a very large anhydrous ammonia contractor, really great guy. But my mom and dad came over to dinner and said, hey, there's a company for sale. I think we should go buy them. And there was another heating air conditioning business that had been in business in Springfield since the 70s. So that's how it started at the dining room table. I said, okay, let's go. And we bought that company. We had already formed Krueger as a legal entity, knowing where we were going with that. And so we bought that company. Within the period of 18 months, we acquired another company who had been in the business since the early 70s. We, within the first 24 months, quadrupled in customer database.
Were your parents involved in the business then?
They were not. My dad is almost always in the financial planning and business world. He was a great mentor to me. I lost him 13 years ago, but he was always a great mentor. And that was, he was kind of the spur. It was funny as he spurred me to buy that other company. We said, yeah, we'll do that. And then the next Sunday dinner, after I had actually, we went ahead and I had left the partnership and said, we're going to do Krueger. The next Sunday, we announced to him that we were having our second child, Reed. So it's kind of like, I guess the Lord won't bless you with things that he doesn't feel like you can handle. So I guess starting a business and having a child all at the same time, we're okay. But
yeah, again, you needed a little more pressure to make sure that business really did work.
And what's interesting with it, David, is they've grown up. Both of the KR kids have grown up in the HVAC trade. Obviously, Reed came to work. I think he was born on Friday. He came to work on Monday or Tuesday in his pack and play. And he started with us full time this year. So it's been good. Little known story is Mindy's dad worked for a local supply house or local supplier called Harry Cooper Supply. Had been around since the 40s, but he worked there for over 50 years in the heating and air conditioning department. What's interesting is I knew him before I even knew my wife, Mindy, his daughter. And Mindy and I met, and then it was just like, oh, your dad. Wow, this is a small world. So there's a family history there of HVAC and the heating and air conditioning trade.
And it sounds like it's going to continue into the future. So Reed is very interested in the family business. Is that correct?
He is. As Mindy says, you know, the mechanical knack and knowledge for understanding things, he's always had that. He was an RC car kid when you know, because some people build and modify remote control cars.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a thing, but it is. It is also an expensive thing, depending on how deep. But he got that very early on. He always got the mechanical side of stuff. So the HVAC thing is heating, air conditioning has really come naturally to him. I've always said that if you have a mechanical aptitude, I can teach you the rest of this. If you don't have a mechanical aptitude, we probably got an uphill battle, but he's fallen in very nicely. So add to that, Riley, our daughter, has taken over as marketing coordinator here. She's handling all of our social media content creation there, and then all of our print and digital stuff. She works in concert with Lemon Cedar Marketing Company, but it's been so valuable to have her in-house also.
Man, that's great. Getting to work with your family. And, you know, sometimes that works, sometimes that doesn't, but it sounds like it's working well with you guys. That's awesome.
Yeah, it is working well. And I'll give you guys kudos with what you and Matt and Liz and them all started with Service Roundtable and then Service Nation Alliance. You know, last year, our both Reed and Riley attended Service World Expo in Tampa with us. And I think that was, they knew Mindy and I had always done the events. They'd always heard about all these people we networked with and mentored with. And then they got exposed to that in earnest in Tampa. And I think it was truly that there was a little fire and that just fanned the flames tremendously.
Oh, yeah. I've always thought that Service World Expo, in addition to just being a great educational event, ends up being motivational for people as well. You know, you meet all these contractors, you get kind of excited about what they're doing and what you could do. It's a great thing.
Yeah.
So tell me about Krueger today.
So Krueger today has grown by another 5 full-time individuals over the last 12 months. And we've added another three trucks on the road. And that always seems to be a metric. How many people and how many trucks do you have?
Yep.
We've grown there. Part of what we launched coming out of, really, it goes back to Service World in Louisville. We launched the brand refresh to take what we'd had as a 20-year brand, which is well-known. We didn't rename the company. We're still Krueger and always have been. But just to bring that up to a higher, more consumer-friendly, rememberable level. And so we did that. You saw at the beginning of this podcast, one of our truck rewraps and just taking it to our down-home roots of being Southwest Missouri, where business can be done on a handshake and people still leave their front doors unlocked and the car keys in the car. So we took it back to that, to our foundation. And it's really worked well this year. A lot of good team members. Everybody talks about building culture. And I think a lot of people talk about it. And then it sometimes has a failure to execute. Here, we've really executed that well. We know the wives. They come to events. We know the kids. The kids come to events. We're a growing large HVAC family. So it's good.
Sounds like it's going well. So I'm really interested in geothermal, and I don't think a lot of Service Nation Alliance members do geothermal. I might be wrong about that, but it's a significant part of your business, isn't it?
It is. You know, total volume-wise, it's probably 50% of our total gross for the year. It has grown exponentially over the last probably 5 years. You know, we've been in the geothermal market for over 20 plus years. And then I've always been a preeminent performer when it comes to recognition in the industry. I'm International Ground Source Heat Pump Association. I'm accredited as an installer through them. Missouri has DNR, Department of Natural Resources, Wellhead Protection. I'm licensed or permitted through them as an unrestricted installer for them. There's some accolades or some requirements that not everybody has or gets. But you know, this environmental side of geothermal in the heating and cooling world is we reduce a large carbon footprint. We operate at a 400 to 500% efficiency rating for the average geothermal system, and usually lower an average homeowner's bill. And this goes for new construction and or retrofit or replacement. Usually can lower the total bill because people look at dollars. They don't look at kilowatt hour usages or CCF of gas. They look at dollars. And so we can usually lower that bill by about 70%.
Oh my gosh. That's fantastic.
We do have the technology now through our manufacturer to actually look at that remotely. So we can actually pull up examples of homes that are on our network through Symphony. And we can look at live operating energy costs because we do current transducers, you know, blower motors, on compressors. And we have a flow meter that calculates actually BTUs of either extracting BTUs from the ground or putting BTUs back in the ground. So we can tell you exactly how the machine is performing at a what efficiency and do that all remotely.
With all these great things about geothermal, how come more contractors don't do geothermal in our area, for example? I don't know anybody that has geothermal.
It goes back to installation is 70% of the job when you're installing product. And geo is a learning curve. It's not just to put a box in, plug it in, turn it on. And we're finding that with more and more equipment now, though. I mean, we've seen the wave of inverter-driven technology from manufacturers in conventional equipment. And that has taken a larger learning curve for contractors. And it's an investment. It's an investment in your team. I don't know who to give credit to for this statement, but I've said it again, and you've heard it, I'm sure. And that is, you know, what if I train all my people to do all this great stuff and they leave? And then the inverse of that is, well, what if you don't train them and they stay?
So, right.
You know, geothermal, there's a training curve there. We've got four individuals here specifically that are 25%+ of their annual training is staying current on geo. On geothermal and how you operate and look at a system when checking it, how you do the installation. It's certainly something that is teachable. You have to want the environment. And if, obviously, if you've got a very successful business with a good EBITDA and a good net profit, I probably would guess that if you ask somebody, you know, well, why don't you do geo? Well, I've already got something that's functioning really well. Why do I want to bolt something else on that is not easily boltable on? It's not an easy trade to you just don't open up a geothermal division overnight. It does take the training and the knowledge.
It seems like it gives you a competitive advantage, though. The operating costs are so low, and there aren't very many people doing it. So if you do it, you've got a tremendous advantage, I would think. I mean, you've got at least a competitive advantage.
And we do. There's nothing that replaces years in business. You know, great marketing and great advertising and branding work at making you a household name. But having been in the geothermal business for 20+ years, we are seeing that come. And we've seen it. It's been coming probably for the last 5 years as, quote, electrification of the nation has started to be a discussion topic. It's put us at the forefront of being a true whole home energy audit type company where we can look at the total operating cost of a home. Because heating, air conditioning is the largest portion of any consumer's bill. But what we've seen is because we are so good at the geothermal and the ground source, I mean, we have a piece of equipment that still holds the title as the most efficient heating and cooling system on the planet. And what it's done is it's an easy transition to conventional inverter-driven technology or something else. So if geothermal isn't the correct fit and or a homeowner's just got high utility bills, but geo isn't a fit for them, our resume already precludes us in saying, they're really good at this. So why wouldn't I use them to do my conventional that is really good and making sure that's performing well? We actually have a product now from our manufacturer in the geothermal world that is new, but it allows you to install the indoor portion of geo because that's one of the caveats with ground source heat pump is there is no outdoor equipment. There's nothing to mow around, weed eat around, be beat up in a hailstorm. But one of the problems, you know, one of the issues we always run with the geo is you have to have a loop fielder. You have to have some way to get rid of that heat.
Right. Well,
our manufacturer has come up with a product called Geo Ready, and it puts the condensing coil and fan temporarily as an outside unit, but allows us to connect that to the indoor unit. So we can retrofit a house with geo without having the loop field in place. And that allows us to come back and, quote, loop it later as the schedule allows. So,
pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So is the upfront cost of geothermal significantly more than a high efficiency traditional heating and air conditioning system?
We've always put it in this way, and that is the equipment is the same. If I look at my equipment costs as an installed product, the equipment costs are almost parallel in price or in investment. The added cost to do geothermal or added investment for geothermal is the ground loop, the portion outside of the house. And that's the additional cost. That's usually a 20%, 25% investment above the equipment installation in that inside the home. We're looking at ROIs as low as 3 years, or return on investments on that as low as 3 years, and as many is maybe seven. One of the caveats to geothermal system is a life cycle, and that is a 20 plus year life cycle. Right now, we have equipment that's 24, 25 years old, still operating at the same efficiency because it didn't set outside. It doesn't get, the condenser coil didn't get dirty. The heat exchanger didn't corrode. And so the equipment life is just tremendously better. Obviously, as a replacement contractor, that doesn't bode well for some people where you want a 12 to 15 year life cycle on equipment. But if we look at the environmental impact of going, have a system that's going to last almost twice as long as conventional, and it's going to operate at, again, 70% less in utility costs, you kind of got to think a little bit bigger picture on what you're doing there. It does come down to an environmental side of going, I'm not replacing a piece of equipment.
Wow, sounds pretty compelling. Where can you install it? Can you install it in cities? What does it take to do the ground loop? I think that's what you called it.
the ground loop or geothermal loop. Yep.
Yeah.
We can do it on the average quarter acre residential lot. I need a spot that's 10 by 10, 10 by 15 square area for a loop field. There are different
requirements. That's all it takes? 10 by 10?
Yep. I can do 10 by 10 square area. Now we're separating the, you know, we're putting those loops at a 10 foot center. That's the next, probably the caveat or next, one of those next hurdles, I should say, in doing geo is you do have to do load calculations. You have to be able to run a loop calculation on thermal conductivity. And again, so there's more engineering involved in it than just the basic load calculation. But, you know, you've been in this trade a long time, and the people who want to run a full manual J load calculation, there are more of them out there now than ever. But there's still those out there that just don't. And it's not a good thing, but they just don't. But you got to have that load data, because that's how I engineer the loop. That's how we engineer the ground loop side of the system, is with the load data and then the equipment, you know, performance data. But yeah, we've got them here in Springfield. We did one as an 1883 old farmhouse. I say old farmhouse. It's a what they call a four square with the old wooden clapboard siding. It was built in the middle of Springfield back in the obviously 1880s. And we took down the side fence and put the drill rig in the backyard and drilled the loop in the backyard and, you know, brought it in through an old rock foundation. And those homeowners they could never have been happier. Why? As a small residential lot. And now they don't have any air conditioner setting outside to listen to.
Oh, yeah. Well, Liz Patrick used to do this presentation on marketing to women. And one of the things she said is that women are not entranced with the box that sits outside. They look at it and they think to themselves, how can I hide this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. Well, they're just, again, if you read instructions, and again, 50% of our business is conventional. So I'm not knocking conventional equipment at all, sure. But you know, where do you put conventional equipment? Don't put it by a window. Don't put it by the dryer vent. Don't put it behind the shrubs. Where do you put it? You know, and they certainly, as you well know, have grown over the years in size. So it's not something that just disappears.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. I want to turn our attention to Service Nation Alliance. You're a Service Nation Alliance member. You've been on advisory board. Now you're an advisory board mentor. What is the advisory board experience and why does it work?
The advisory board experience works from the old adage of iron sharpens iron, as does one man sharpen another. And most of us in the contracting world are great contractors. We're great technicians. That's the reference, the EMeth book. You know, we're great technicians. We do technical work. We're probably usually not the best business people. And so while we can fix things and take care of customers, when it comes to the how do you run a business, you usually struggle with that. With the advisory boards within Service Nation Alliance, that meets you up with other like-sized contractors who are non-competitive. And then we work through best trade practices. I know with the advisory board I'm mentoring, it has been amazing to start peeling back the proverbial layers of the onion with them and just to see their eyes open. One of the things I talk about is know your numbers. Know your numbers, know your numbers. If you don't know your numbers, it's okay. But continuing to try and run a business and not knowing your operating numbers, you don't own a business, you own a job. That was the original statement, I believe, with you and Matt and them was, you know, providing contractors with a profitable exit strategy. And so that's where the advisory board comes in. And it's just been so nice to be able to share and be available to our advisory board members to share the knowledge of how to do things. And one of the terms we use is we like to R&D, and it's not research and development. It's rob and duplicate. Running an HVAC contracting business or a plumbing company or an electrical company or a solar company, they're all service businesses. You know, we have people that go to work and we supply a product. The technical side of doing the job hasn't really changed. That's all the same, nor has the financial side. We just haven't focused on the financial side. But we already have people in the advisory board that I mentor that have already implemented some changes from best trade practices provided by Service Nation Alliance and some stuff we've got here at Kruger that have already made changes. I credit Ron Smith. We started off with, if you're going to rebuild your business, start with the way you answer the phone, because that's how every transaction takes place in our business. He covers that in HVAC Spells Wealth, because it is. We've coined the phrase drinking from a fire hose, trying to build a business. And you don't have to. You certainly can be deluged with information, but it's taking those little bite-sized pieces. And that's what we work through with, again, the advisory board I mentor. And that goes also to the Retail Sales Mastermind group. That's open to anybody who's a Service Roundtable or Service Nation Alliance member. You can sign your retail sales professionals up for that group. They don't have access to dashboard numbers or anything else. It's just that group. But it's really also been really good to have that group, because, again, it's how does a salesperson or a comfort consultant, how do they refine their skills? And it's been able to rub elbows. We got people from as far north and east as you can get, all the way to the West Coast, that are part of that group. And it's really good to get them together and share ideas and what's keeping them up at night, maybe what's causing them some heartburn and overcoming objections. Again, being able to help each other grow.
It's a very satisfying thing, isn't it? I mean, is there anything that's better than helping somebody with their business and watching their business take off, and they have better lives and their families' lives are better? They can pay their coworkers more. Their coworkers have better lives. It's a fantastic feeling, isn't it?
It is a very good feeling. I remember the first time Mr. Bob Vering asked, "Says, hey, what would you say? I know you've done the retail thing. What do you think about a mentoring an AB group?" And I was like, "I don't know, Bob. I don't know that I have all my ducks in a row." And he goes, "I don't think everybody has all their ducks in a row, or anybody does." So, you know, I certainly know you've been in the trade. You've been part of the roundtable back to what, 02, 03? So it's like you certainly probably have a toolbox full of tools that are valuable for our membership. It's just a case of opening the toolbox and sharing. And it is. It has been more rewarding than I thought it would be. I was certainly intimidated by it to begin with. But to realize that these guys were just like me at one, I was just like them at one point. And what's really good is to see the participation and them wanting to learn and wanting to get better at the trade, wanting them to build a culture. I just had one of them just yesterday. He emailed me through the group and was like, "Hey, do you have time for a phone call?" And even just through the short period of time that I've mentored the group, you know, that's already got his wheel spinning. You know, "Hey, I want an incoming call process. We talked about the perfect service call, and I want to master that. Thank you, Joe Cunningham." And just being able to share that information. His words were, "I can't tell you how much this takes weight off my shoulders in knowing that I can ask for this information from a group or a mentor like you, and that it's going to be emailed over to me freely. Here you go." And it's like what Service Nation is all about. So ask away.
When new people join your advisory board, what do you tell them to do to make it successful for them?
The number one thing is participate. Really.
Life is 90% about showing up, right?
It really is. And being able to have mentorship is only as good as showing up. We all know the euphemisms around New Year's resolutions, and I'm going to join a gym and I'm going to go work out. Well, joining the gym is the easy part. Showing up is the hard part. And that was the challenge when I decided to mentor this group, is I will pour my heart and soul. I'm an open book. I have got my whole host of bad things in the world I've done here that didn't work out well, and I'm willing to share all of it. But you guys have to show up. You got to show up. You got to participate. It's an hour out of your week. And so show up. And they do. The next thing I would encourage them to do, and I do it religiously, is take notes. I always try and have what we're going to discuss in note format so that the document can be sent. We've all been to those conferences or those training classes where you get minimal handouts. Maybe they've got a wonderful slideshow and then none of it's shared. And so your scribbly notes as you took and you don't remember it. But I always try and share that information there. So show up, participate, and take notes or get notes. would be my advice in how to maximize the return on the mentorship and the advisor board group.
Are people ever embarrassed about their numbers and reluctant to share that information on an advisory board?
I'd probably say it's the number one thing.
Because it's a little hard to get past that for some people, isn't it?
It is. You know, and I know with our board, and I know we don't directly discuss numbers as in dollar amounts in the retail sales mastermind group, but we do discuss lead generation. We do discuss close percentages. We do discuss how many leads you're going to need to hit a revenue goal. And we deal with those on a personal level, meaning as a comfort consultant, what do you want to see your revenue at? Well, how many leads do you have to generate? How many do you have to present to? How many of those do you have to close? And what's the average sell price to close at? But with ownership, it is. And it's been interesting to visit those guys. I don't want to share my, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. Well, we're going to get sure because that's business. But they are. I think they're intimidated. It's not knowing. I've got an industry person I know here, even in the Springfield area, he's a small plumber. And he was talking about growing this year or growing next year. And I said, well, I'd be glad to sit down and visit with you and help you out because I know your small shop and that. And I said, we can sit down and just look at your balance sheet and your P&L from QuickBooks. And he's like, QuickBooks? What's that?
Oh, no. Well, I think you know where the first step is.
I did. I said, what accounting system do you use? And he's like, well, I have an accountant. And I'm like, no, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about accountants. I'm talking about accounting system. So
that's a hurdle. But, you know, it's not unusual. I've known a number of companies that started out with that same problem and they joined ServiceNation. They started working through it. They ended up getting an accounting system. They start tracking their numbers and you know, they're very successful now. So it's completely possible.
Yeah. Well, we know there's multiple examples out there of people who they've tripped over stuff. They've had problems. You know, there's one of them who shares his story about his issues with 941s, which are payroll taxes. That story openly. Yeah. But, you know, last time I had the chance to visit with him, he was his house in Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, exactly.
So things have changed. And here's the fascinating part to that is it was put your nose to the grindstone, surround yourself with immeasurably great people, ask for help, constantly look for resources, constantly be learning, evolve beyond just your own comfort zone, and you can really accomplish great things because he did what he did in a time frame, but in the world of time frames, a relatively short one, and it's a great story. So
we're talking about Ken Goodrich here. Yeah. He's a pretty impressive guy.
He is a pretty impressive guy. So
yeah. Let's wrap this up with a question about the future. Looking into the future, what do you see for yourself and your company? What do you want to have happen?
So we're in that spot right now that I think a lot of people do find themselves, or a lot of companies find themselves in. And then that is we've grown to a spot in which myself, Mindy, who is our CFO and also handles all, you know, oversees dispatch. We do have a full-time CSR and have had for a long time, but we're in that spot for us in which to go to the next level, we're going to have to develop that middle management structure or that management structure that will allow Mindy and I to step out and work on the business more in a full-time fashion and a less of the in the business role. It's nice to have built a great team. And we do have some team members in place that are going to be able to fill some of those positions. But it was one of the things in looking at us as we built out our org chart a little further for the next 2 to 5 years. And it was building out an organizational chart that had positions on them with defined KPIs for those positions, what we expected from them. And what was interesting is I went at it from an aspect of not thinking of a person to fill the position, meaning if there's somebody already in my building who could fill that position, it was, I need to build the position out, then find the person to fill it. If I've already got them, great. If I don't, then I got to go find that person. We didn't want to limit our thinking to that. But so it's scaling it up through the 7 to 10 million mark. Branson is a close suburb to us. I say close, it's 30 miles. And one of the best things people I think have done is potentially add a second location. But Springfield's a large demographic. We look at Springfield Metro, we're at almost 750,000 people. So there's a lot of growth to be happening here. That's the next step for Kruger is to begin to grow to that 6 or 7 trucks on the road in full-time service and the third or fourth replacement crew. The story has been told or happened, you know, with multiple ServiceNation Alliance members. It's just making sure that you have that controlled growth and in an organized fashion.
Well, it sounds like it'll be a challenge and a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is going to be fun. It is. And then thankfully, we've got Reed came on board full time, and he's excited about it. And we're going back to Service World with both of them this year. So it's good to see that, you know, a lot of people look at exit strategies, and I don't know, they always say you don't necessarily want to have your kids be your exit strategy, but sometimes that works out. Mm-hmm. That's where I see it going. I want to be able to make sure that the people here still have a great career and are well compensated and have a phenomenal family life.
Well, Rory, thank you so much for doing this with me. This was really interesting. I loved hearing all about geothermal and your business and how it's grown and the family involvement. Look forward to hearing more about it in the future.
Thanks for having me. Obviously, been a longtime listener to a podcast, so you do a great job. I appreciate you having me on.
We're always looking for good ideas and interviews for our podcast. If you have an idea or maybe you think you should be interviewed, just shoot an email to profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. That's profilesinprosperity@serviceroundtable.com. If you think what we're doing has any value, it would be very helpful if you would give us a great rating on iTunes. Thanks for your support. Hope to see you again soon. Bye.